even if you're not sitting the whole week, it's very well to know how to maintain the posture and not feel like you're suffering. So I thought I would open it up for questions first. Also thought it wouldn't, if you all wouldn't mind, that one of us could walk around behind during Zazen and see how you're doing and help you a bit, if you don't mind being touched a little bit. Beata studied with Darlene Cohen Roshi for a long time and knows a lot about posture and the human body and its comportment. So I think we have a wonderful resource right in our midst that we can call on if she is willing to help us. She knows a lot. So are there questions? Are you comfortable? Is everybody comfortable?
Yes.
Oh, I'm not. I have pain in shoulders and neck, and it's migrates, so it's not something's very specific. But part of what I'm curious about is how much attention to give it. In other words, whether to kind of zero in on it to try to use it as a Dharma gate, or whether to include it in a much bigger realm so that it's not quite so dominating.
And of course, we don't have a big stick to hit you with, so that always helps. You know? If you hit that muscle just in the right place, it's wonderful. But one thing that helps very much is to line up your ears and your tuck your chin. Mm. So that your head is straight and in balance. Okay. And if you've got it right, your shoulders just naturally fall down. But if your shoulders aren't loose, then it's harder for them. You know, if you can loosen them up and just get them so that they can go back and forward and aren't resisting so much. There's a kind of samurai kind of feeling about, I think, when we get it in our shoulders. Mm-hmm. That, and we carry a lot of weight, psychic as well as physical. Dogen always, in fact, he gave one whole lecture saying, line up your ears with your shoulders and your nose with your navel. And then he bowed and he left. That was the whole lecture. It's really essential, and it's really hard to do because we spend a lot of time reading and driving and all those things. So we're not like that anymore. We have to grow into it. That's my take. Beata, what would you say?
I would say exactly the same thing. And also, I thought if it really is hurting, that you might walk at a normal pace out during communion on the deck, just to give it a chance to loosen up and stretch out a little bit once in a while, you know, if it gets really bad. I think when you're in your posture is when you're sort of in perfect alignment, your head kind of feels like it's floating on top of the little atlas bone there. So you might rock back and forth before you settle in, find this center, and just get your head kind of floating there. Feels a little like a little less weight. But alignment is the important thing.
It's a tiny little bone that the whole head is sitting on. The head weighs about, 5 pounds?
Yeah, more than that.
It's big.
It's more like 10.
Yeah, like 10 or 12 pounds.
It's this great big heavy thing, and it's on these two little bones. So any kind of a little off, the whole it's reflected in your whole body. Everything begins to feel it. So that's you pick the exact most important thing, I think.
And what about the attention part?
I think it goes. Koban used to say that when we sit, we build ourselves up. And that's very intentional. Mm-hmm. We actually decide to do this and decide to take this position. But then as we sit, we, after a while, we notice that it's come down. So we wake up to our position, mm-hmm. and then we slowly bring ourselves back. Mm-hmm. It's the same with the mind. Mm-hmm. We bring ourselves into the present moment, and before we know it, we're in Denmark or someplace, you know. And then we come back. Mm-hmm. And the more coming back we do, the easier it is. Mm-hmm. And the less likely it is that we wander so far. And after a while, it's just sheer awareness without mm-hmm. worry. Mm-hmm. But it takes a while to relax into that.
Angie?
Yes.
This is working down from the neck. I got a frozen shoulder several years ago, but ever since then I've had trouble with my mudra. Mm. So it's all tied in, because if your shoulder is tight, then my mudra feels crooked. And I think about it a lot when I'm sitting, more than I'd like to.
It feels crooked? Is it really crooked?
Well, my husband told me it was crooked.
He said,
you used to have such a beautiful mudra.
Oh. You just tell him those pants make his butt look fat.
She knows my husband, so. but really, I do look, and I look down, and somehow it's gone over here, and it's tight here, and I just think it ties into the pain, and so I'm trying to get how far my elbows go out.
Is it hurting?
It does hurt, yeah, all in here.
Does it help to massage it?
Yeah. But no, I don't want to do that during zazen. It doesn't hurt that badly, but it hurts. And I just think that if you're sitting without sitting half lotus, then you don't have anything to prop your
yes.
hands on.
Yes.
So I tried propping it on things before, but it still seems to. I guess the question would be: should you go with what feels right, or should you? During sesshin is an opportunity to keep working to have it in the center for me.
Yes. Yeah. And I would get a prop that works and okay. use it, a towel or one of those little black cushions or anything that will help you to keep it there. And if it starts to hurt, it's fine to massage it quietly while you're sitting. It's better to do that than to let the pain build up. But it looks, if it's going to one side or the other, it's usually because there's more force on one side than the other. Mm-hmm. And it looks like your left arm is pushing you harder than the right. Mm-hmm. You know, in order to keep it in the middle, they're both. There should be a balanced force between the two of them, the two arms. Mm-hmm. And sometimes one side starts pushing the other side over for one mysterious reason or another.
Then my left side is pushing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've started sitting, I don't usually sit like this, but Burmese style. Mm-hmm. that feel like less balanced anyway.
Yes. Yes.
So loosen up on my left rather than keep adjusting my right.
Yeah, and but take care of your right also. If it needs special attention, give it to it.
Yeah. I'd like to offer an alternative mudra that Darlene taught for people with shoulder pain. It's called the Diamond Mudra, and the idea is that rather than communicating this way, your hands coming together and integrating you in this way, mm-hmm. you're placing them right at the edge of your hips here, and with your fingers spread, so that if they were together, they form a diamond. If your thumbs and index fingers were together, they'd form a diamond. This is really helpful for people with shoulder pain, and you can do it alternatively, alternate between the cosmic mudra and this mudra. This mudra gives you the dynamic tension when your fingers are spread, because if you start to, waver, your fingers will come together, you'll lose the strength of the mudra. So you can still use the mudra in the same way, but it allows you to have your hands much closer into your body, let that shoulder rest a little bit, turning over your hand when you have shoulder pain is exacerbating potentially to the shoulder. Mm-hmm. So you might just try alternating, or and then if your pain increases, do the Diamond Mudra more until your shoulder rests, and then come back into the cosmic. But I would say, if you're having shoulder pain, get a prop. Yeah, don't just let it scream at you, because it doesn't get a lot better usually that way.
Yeah, I noticed too, Beata, in this mudra, it opens the chest up.
Yes, very much so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the mudra I use when lying down as well. And Malcolm uses it. It's a it's really a great alternative to the cosmic mudra, I think. Still very integrating.
Mm-hmm.
But lets your shoulders drop and rest.
Yeah, it's letting my shoulder drop.
Drop and rest, right. Yeah. Drop and rest. Yeah.
This weekend is my introduction to sitting zazen, so I've been exploring trying a lot of different things. I have my right hip is too achy, so I can't really sit for long periods Tibetan style. So I've been experimenting with a bench, and I feel like that's working best for me. Is that a good option?
Yes.
The hip pain, is that the best option?
I've been doing it for 15 years.
Works good.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if it feels right, that's...
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't sit cross-legged. And I just decided when I started zazen, I didn't want to dick around for 6 months trying to get my body to sit cross-legged when I could sit just fine this way. And I've been sitting seiza for 15 years now. Yeah. And there are tricks, and I'd be happy to share them with you to help the long period sitting.
Mm-hmm. And what are those tricks? As much as I'm a seiza, I still need to know.
I found sitting spread like this,
mm-hmm.
dropped my pelvis and strained my lower back.
Mm.
So keeping the knees together helps support the belly and the lower back. Mm-hmm. That's why I invested in a bench, because using a zafu spreads you and makes it difficult to maintain for a long period of time. Also using the bench eliminates the pressure in the private parts of the body for long periods of time, and proper choice of underwear.
Yes.
There are seams that actually in long session will cause problems on the bench. So be mindful of that if you're experiencing some point pain, that it could actually be a seam. So
well, I'm glad you found a position that works. That's wonderful. In a short weekend. Yeah, that's great.
I'd like to presume to offer some things that work for me. The first thing I do is get my foundation from my waist down in place, whatever works, whether it stays up. For me, it's Burmese. But what I've found that really helps over the years is for the upper half, when I first get settled, I'll take a big breath and I'll exaggerate that whole upper body where I'm opening the chest and in that little arch in the back is very important. So I just kind of exaggerate it all, you know, really roll the shoulders back. And I particularly notice in Sesshin it's important to have some kind of support for the mudra. And I have a belt buckle that works, and I also pad it up with a little pad. And so I'll just really exaggerate that and then relax into it. So, but that first going kind of really far into exaggerating all those things, the chin, the chest, the shoulders, the arch in the back, and relaxing into it really helps me. And then holding it all very lightly, you know, so in the inhale, the exaggeration, and then the exhale, settle into it. And it's like the inhale establishes it, and then you just relax into it. And then if the posture slips during the period, I'll do just a very tiny version of that. I don't think you could hardly notice it if you were watching. But it'll just be, again, on an in-breath, and just kind of adjust. And then hold the whole thing very lightly, the kind of floating of the head you mentioned, and the mudra too. Even though you've got some support for the mudra, it should still sort of be floating too. So nothing kind of settles too much. That's fine. That's all.
One of the things you mentioned, Rob, that I think is really helpful for people with back and neck pain in Zazen is this idea of breathing into the vertebrae, that you can breathe into the little spaces in between your vertebrae and it actually relieves pain for a couple of seconds. And it opens up, actually, the spaces in there just by putting your attention on them and breathing consciously into them. This was something Darlene talked a lot about, just to open up the spaces, give a little bit of relief to the back and neck during exhaustion. Also, if your legs go to sleep, she loved this one. You can, tense your butt muscles, raise yourself up, Darlene, raise yourself up about an inch, you know, and just hold it for a couple seconds, slowly let yourself down. What this does is it pumps blood into your knee, your legs and ankles and feet, and keeps circulation going. So during long sitting, you know, if your feet and legs are falling asleep or getting really cold, it could be a circulation issue. So that was something she did, actually right on the cushion during Zazen. Mm-hmm.
Mei Li used to say, as she said a couple of times, she was our teacher up in Arcata, she'd say, find the space in your body. And sometimes that a little thing like that can really help. Just a little phrase like that can really help.
Zach?
I don't know if I have a question per se, but I find it helpful talking about breathing in the back or finding the space, because I've always been, and I've talked to several teachers about this, people always emphasize breathing into the hara. And we had a discussion here, I think, at Dankaway about, and Cliff sent me some really helpful information via email about this, but I've never had much of a sense of hara. And so a lot of times I find it's almost like I feel like I can't breathe when I try to breathe into there. And so I found it really helpful. And basically I just had to, because teachers kept telling me, no, just breathe into the hara. And finally I just had to go against their advice and breathe into my chest and be like, you know what, I have to breathe in my chest, like, whatever. And I think maybe that was kind of a good experience to be like, to realize, like, they weren't sitting in my body, so it was up to me. But it's for me, I'm finding more and more, like, there's no one right thing for me, because I have the type of body that tends to lock up in one posture if I do it for too long. So even, like, if I'm on the seiza bench, that'll help a lot for one period, but then it becomes more difficult to breathe, and my back feels stiff, and my chest gets bound up. And so I think, like you were saying, the rotating for me, because it's just like, I don't know how much of it is psychosomatic, or how much of it is really muscular or what, but I just start to lock up. And so sometimes I find I need to breathe in my chest, sometimes I need to breathe in my, let my back fill up, it feels like with air, and sometimes lower, and then switching up posture too. But also, I was going to ask about this, is another thing that I've just kind of had to allow myself to do, and let go of some of the, like, striving tendency that I have, is, like, when early sitting, I would sit, you know, so straight and try to have that perfect alignment with the ears and the nose. And Tim, who taught me how to sit in the style of Zen first, had gorgeous full lotus posture and just, like, immaculate
alignment. He really hates those
people. Does he still have
that? Yeah, he has this big spaghetti legs. Yeah. And
that's not fair.
Really.
And so I for that someday.
Like, we should break his knees.
Against his advice, I tried to emulate that a lot. And the first where I first sat my first like half dozen sesshin or so in Pennsylvania, the teachers would come up and literally with all their strength push down on my shoulders because I would be so tight. And the teacher prescribed the Hakuin method of the butter on the head for me, which helped some, but. I find that for me, sometimes I have to let myself collapse a little bit and be a little bit collapsed.
Yes.
And sometimes that allows my breath to come actually better. And then again, other times I need to straighten up more. So for me, it's just this constant, like, rotation, I guess. It's like each sit is new and I kind of have to improvise a little bit to figure out how to work with my body.
Well, the more you sit, the more familiar you become with your body, and the more it becomes a whole thing rather than bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And that Hakuin shamanistic thing that he picked up from the hermit is very helpful to some people. It's not butter on the head. It's in. So the image is the butter in the head that is melting all the way through the inside of your body. And that relaxes for some people. It helps you relax so that you're not so rigid. Because rigidity just creates exhaustion so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And pain. So you really need to be resilient so that you're always moving a little bit. Don't freeze yourself in place. Allow yourself to move a little bit. And your breathing, of course, you're always moving just because of your breath. So don't hold your breath. Probably you can't breathe in your mahara because you're holding it too much. You can do that. You can just barely get it in and out and survive. But you want your whole body to be breathing, your toes too, and your ears, and your hair. All of it. It's a struggle, I know. And it doesn't stop because our bodies change.
No.
This is snooze. Darn.
Rats.
Yeah.
Regarding the use, moving the breath around the body, I've gone through periods as I think different issues came up for me, And there have been periods when I could not breathe into my stomach because it was just locked for me. And really the only way I could reestablish a normal breathing pattern was to lie down. So I think it also has to do with what's going on in our psychic body. And how our physical body is a reflection of that. And sometimes we can pick up, like the mudra imbalance, and Angie, you know, points out one arm may be pushing the other. And for a long time, my right leg would just be so tense. And when I'd notice that, I could breathe into it and relax. But then I started to notice a certain theme in my thinking. Mm-hmm. So I think when we notice a chronic tightness or imbalance, we can check for a tightness. It may not be in your arms at all. It may actually be originating somewhere in your back. And it's accompanied mm-hmm. with a certain pattern of thinking. It may not even be always be the same topic, but it might be anger or loss or something general like that. And that's how your body is evoking and manifesting that psychic body. So those can be dharma gates, like mm-hmm. you said. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that for me, that the depth of how far I can take it will often tell me how tight I am. Well, yeah, because you know, you just kind of normally are breathing, and then all of a sudden you go, "Well, wait a minute, I'm only getting kind of this far.
Yeah,
I'm not
yeah.
getting all the way down." Mm-hmm. And so then there's some work at relaxing and opening to let it mm-hmm. go further.
Yeah.
I think the point you make, Zach, that's very moving to me is that there's a huge difference between the idea of practice and the practice of practice. Mm. And the practice of practice is meeting this body just as it is in every moment. And it is different in every moment. I'm like you, I have a body that's always different. I sit down, who are we today? Who are we at this at, you know, 3 p.m.? And it is always different. That, you know, you look at me. There's about 15 ways to sit and lie, and you know, because I have a body like that. So I think learning to love that about your body and, you know, see it as a dharma gate, that it's actually very refreshing and beautiful that every zazen period you get to look anew at this body. You don't get to make assumptions about your body. That's fantastic. I mean, what a beautiful practice opportunity. So use it. And thank you for bringing it up.
The issue of where the hara is and how it should be experienced has come up a number of times for me, actually for 40 years. And I found a line in one of Kobin's probably discussions that said the hara can be anywhere in a person.
Mm-hmm.
What did he mean?
Interviewed by a young Japanese journalist a few weeks ago who doesn't sit and was wanting to know everything about Kobin, and she asked the same thing. What did he mean? What was Kobin? And I had to say, I don't know. I don't remember hearing that. I do remember Sonia saying that she thought that women's hara, that women should hold their mudra much farther down on their body, and that their center is down here, more womb-like than belly-like. And I've often thought that that's probably true. But as far as Kobin's intention in saying that, I think he's just loosening up the whole thing so there's no attachment to the idea. Which, of course, we tend to do. Oh, I've got to get the hara and got to breathe into, you know. So, better just to let it come and go.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was great. Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify the question from before about pain, using it centrally, because I do have the same thing where I get the pain in my back, and it looks like some of it's inevitable in Sesshin, and do I just like hone in on that and just kind of use it as like a Dharma gate, or I always think of it like as like a koan or something, and make it sort of my center of my attention, or do I just kind of let it blend in with everything else that's happening around. And that, I skimmed through the pamphlet you gave, which was incredibly helpful. And that was brought up in there, of just letting the pain be one among the numerous things happening. Because I think oftentimes I think, and this must have come from somewhere that I read it or something, that I could somehow, you know, break through the pain or break through something by focusing. If I focus on it enough, then something's going to happen, and it often just hurts more and more.
I know a lot of people who broke the cartilage in their legs, in their knees, by sitting through the pain that way. It doesn't work. It just makes it worse.
Well, I have something that might relate to that, is that, because I've also sat with, you know, herniated disc, and coming back to sitting after that, and when you're sitting after a few days, it really does kind of blend in. And you know how it is when you're sitting, you don't know what's real and everything. It's good for me anyway to make decisions ahead of time rather than trying to make a decision at that moment. I mean, that seems like it's going against what Beata said about, you know, a different body every time, but both of those things. So when I first got back to sitting, it was okay. I'm not going to think about it during Zazen, but I am going to take a walk on this particular sitting. Or I'm going to do the left side, then the right side, and just have it planned out so that it's hard to decide when you're sitting there, and you can end up sitting through a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. Or you might get into the macho thing, which all of us do. Mm-hmm. Well, which I do. And what's the point?
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to hold your body and say, just poor body, poor body. And just give it all your love and attention. You know, we take it so for granted, but actually it's us. And so we can love it and care for it. And if it's hurting too much, then give it a break. Or massage it. You can massage your shoulders. I often do that before I go to sleep. It's so nice. Not even in Sesshin, but just at home, just to give it, you know, some little relief and attention.
And stretching.
Stretching helps too. Stretching is wonderful.
And also keeping this area warm.
Mm-hmm.
I find that's very important for me. When the room is cold, like it was yesterday morning, my back screams. And if I can just keep it warm, then a cool room is actually helpful during Zazen, but I need to keep my back warm. And if you need to use like one of those hand warmers or something back there, I think that's legal.
Anything is legal.
I think the question of consciousness and where to put the mind is a really vast field. Darlene talked a lot about the refinement of consciousness in working with pain, and that's what the booklet really is addressing. And you know, Zazen is an inclusion practice. So it's not essentially, as Darlene taught it, it's not essentially a focused practice. So you can use pain or any other thing as an object of focus. You can use your breath as an object of focus. Every time you wander, you bring back to breath. And that's all fine. But if you have a body of pain, it's hard to do that. eventually, I mean, it's just hard. You can start fighting with yourself. You don't want to come back to a body of pain, and that's natural. So you're fighting your normal human tendency to see pain as an alarm, like I should do something. So her teaching is that if you can return to the moment rather than to an object of focus. So if you're in a lot of pain, rather than return to the pain, return to all the moment is full of. If that means you need to look out the window for a second, take in some trees, you know, a little bit more stimulation, that's fine. But sounds, you know, anything that you, so that your pain is one of 100 things. That's what she talked about. Mm-hmm. The moment, there's a million things going on in the moment. So if you can learn to notice 99 of them and your pain, then you can be with that pain. Mm-hmm. And the other 99. But if the pain is all you have, her point is that is not a life worth living. So expand, come back to a wider field. Start noticing more of what your senses are observing. Yeah. Send your mind to your ears. Send your mind to your, you know, your skin. Feel what's on your skin. You know, things like that. Take in more of what the moment is full of.
Yeah.
In the medical profession now, they're emphasizing pain, and there are signs in the hospital all over the walls saying, if you're in pain, ask for meds. Because they suddenly, finally realize that if you have pain, it will get more. And once it goes beyond a certain point, you really can't control it anymore. Mm-hmm. So if you catch it in the beginning and do take care of it, then you are much less likely to really suffer from it. You just keep it down and under the radar so that you can concentrate on so many other things that are happening. But once it builds up, it becomes the only subject. And that's torture. That's really tough. It's amazing it took so long for that to be discovered. Now they just thrust oxycodone and Vicodin and all these things. You know, here, have some more.
We have a really fun sushi.
Pain? What pain?
Bell? What bell?
I'm hearing bells.
What's
a bell?
I wanted to say something too about Keenhin, that even though we're sitting very straight on the cushion, perhaps, that it's easy to lose it on the walking meditation, to lose the sense of the posture of the body. It's a trickier thing because it's moving body, and it's moving very, very slowly, and that takes a special kind of balance. It's much easier to move faster and to stay in the present moment and keep your head balanced. Often heads go forward in walking meditation. So if you can keep your head balanced on those two little bones and chin tucked, and then put your attention on the feeling of the floor as you walk, it's a remarkable experience. It's what's happening. And the floor is changing all the time. And you yourself are changing as you go. And you're shifting balance from, somebody said, from yin to yang as you go slowly. So Keenhin isn't just a matter of getting around the room so you can sit down again. It's a whole kind of practice in itself. And to put your whole body into it as you go is helpful, especially if you're having trouble on the cushion, because it releases that frozenness that comes. And you can breathe more easily as you stand and walk. I'm hobbling at this point. I hope it's not too distracting. And really appreciating it a lot because it's such an interesting alternative to sitting. And it's a lot harder. Much harder. Especially if your legs don't work.
Also, Paula, if your shoulder's hurting, Kinyan, the mudra might be even more difficult than Kinyan if your shoulder's hurt. So an alternative is to hold your hands behind your back like this.
You have your fingers. Oh, thank you.
Did you all see that?
Just kind of holding one hand in the other like this. So that it kind of stretches the shoulders a little mm-hmm. bit. But it's just a different, kind of mudra for walking. Mm-hmm.
Steve?
I just relate a lot to your pain. I've sat with pain most of all the time I've sat. And my feeling is many times when pain diminishes, it's at a moment when things, when you've suddenly felt that things are okay. And your breath will really change suddenly sometimes, and your circulation will improve markedly and pain will disappear. So, I don't know. I don't know what makes things okay, but every once in a while, things really seem okay.
It's like allowing it.
Yeah, it's like the loving yourself and mm-hmm. and feeling and knowing. I don't know exactly what, but sometimes things really seem okay, and it's amazing. It's such a wash of relief.
Yeah, I knew someone who had terrible pain in his knees and suffered. And finally he said, and he tried everything, and nothing worked. And finally he just said to his knees, "I don't care, just go ahead and keep on hurting. I don't care." It just went away. So we have lots of resistance that we don't know about until it shows up often in our body. I often think like a six-year-old digging in her heels and saying, "You can't make me! You can't make me do this!" And finally you just say, okay, I give up.
I worry about Zach when you say that. You know what I mean? Because yeah. There's a certain kind of pain in your knees that you really, really...
That's right. You don't want to break the
guard. No, you don't want to say, "I don't care about you."
Tony talked about knowing the difference between the kind of pain that goes away when you stand up. So you know when you're sitting there, "Oh, this will go away when I stand up." Yeah. So just be with that pain. That's the teacher. That's pain as teacher. But if it is pain that you are hurting yourself, you're doing harm to your body, that's a different kind of pain, and you want to respond to that pain and not just gut out that pain, because ultimately you'll harm your body and not be able to sit. So better to, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Yeah, because I was going to say, too, it can be confusing with the moment of okayness, which I've had those, but I've also had the ones where you sit through the pain, and then you get that huge endorphin rush, and everything feels really okay. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. For a period of zazen, you're just on cloud nine, but then I can't walk the next day, you know? So,
yes. Right.
I've had that too.
Yes, right.
Here's your clue.
Yeah.
That's the clue.
That's the clue.
Yeah, you want to be really careful.
There may be some other clues too. I mean, do you have crackly joints? then be very careful with your joints because they're dry joints. I mean, at City Center, you know, the very best way to get up from a prostration is without using your hands, pretty much. But they will tell you, if your knees crack, and they don't care what age you are, when you do that, then don't do it. Use your hands to push yourself up because you've got knees predisposed to blowing out. Yeah. Not that, you know, many people listen to them, but they do tell them
that. Yeah. Well, I've blown out both my knees. That's why they're the way they are. So, yeah.
And also when bowing, full bows, you'll hear in the Zendo, clunk, as everybody's knees hit the floor, and I just go, oh! Because, you know, precious little knees. Wham! I don't know. It's something to think about.
In fact, I think we should use sabatons for prostrations for service. You just bring, switch it around and stand in front of it, and then when you bow, you have something to bow on. I feel terrible as a teacher of being the only one who has anything to bow on. It's not fair.
Yeah, that's where the tatami mats are very nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also hard. They bring the sabatons for service. Everybody puts their sabaton
down. Yeah, and why not? Because this is plywood. This is tough. Yeah. Well, thank you all. Lots and lots of sitting wisdom. Very good to hear.
Very helpful.
Very helpful.